I'm Candace Michelle, and this is another segment of Our Community. You know, I love the truly remarkable people that we have living here. I especially appreciate all the people who step up to the plate over and over again to help out those less fortunate than themselves. Almost 70 years of living on this planet has taught me that we often don't, and can't in most cases, control the circumstances in our lives, and the inescapable truth of there but for the grace of God go I. My father, who was not a religious man, lived his life with this simple code. There's always room for one more at the table, especially if they're down on their luck or in need. I've been in those circumstances a time or two in my own life, and I always appreciate and am grateful to the compassionate members of our community that walk their talk. Today, my guest is one such inspiring person. Beth Barker Hidalgo is the Curry Services Coordinator for Oregon Coast Community Action. Welcome to the show, Beth.
Thank you, Candace.
That's Happy a to be bit here. Of a mouthful, isn't it?
It is. You did great.
Well, thank you. So doesn't Oregon Coast Community Action, isn't that typically shortened to ORCA?
Yes.
Okay. So when I hear ORCA, a lot of times I think whale, and that's not really... That's not really what we're talking about.
No, or there's also the heating and air company down in Harbor. We're not them either.
Okay, that's a problem.
We have two C's in our ORCA.
Okay, right. And the OR is for Oregon. Got it.
Yes.
Okay, so Beth, I'm thrilled to have you on the show. I've seen you out and about in the community, you know, a million times. But I don't really know much about you. So would you like to, you know, kind of tell us a little bit about who you are, where you come from, where you grew up?
No? Sure. Yeah. I like to say that I was raised bi-coastal. I was born in Vermont.
Great.
Burlington, Vermont. And we lived on Lake Champlain when I was very little. I'm the youngest of four siblings.
Wow.
And... So, at about age six, my folks divorced, and mom moved herself and us four children to Roseville, California in 1969.
Clear across the country.
Yeah.
Why?
Family support.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And
makes sense.
At age four, my mother and I were in an auto accident, and we went off at a bridge into a dry riverbed, and she severed her spine and was then a paraplegic and had to use a wheelchair.
Good grief.
If you know anything about Vermont winters or even spring or fall, it's there. And at that time, so that would have been 66, 67 when that accident occurred, pre-Americans with Disabilities Act, no ramps, you know, the built environment and the weather were not conducive to activity and for her. So moving to California was a step in a direction that gave her more mobility and more freedom.
Was it just you and your mom went off that bridge?
Yes.
Huh. Do you have memories of it?
No.
Thank goodness, right?
Right.
Your brain just said, no, we do not want to remember this.
I was four, and this was in a 67 Mustang, no seatbelts. And we went 50 feet into a dry riverbed. So I always look at it this way. I'm not done yet. If I were done, I would have been done then.
Yeah,
so
clearly.
I have a lot to
clearly.
Do. So.
So tell me about growing up in California.
Oh, it was an ideal... life, Bobby Soxer, Girl Scout, you know, got to walk. I actually was a latchkey child before that terminology was common.
Right.
I walked to school. My elementary school was about four or five blocks from our home. And
perfect.
My best friend lived across the street. And, you know, that was the days when you played till the street lights came on.
Exactly.
And, you know,
exactly.
If you were in the house, there must have been something wrong with you.
Exactly. I know.
So really idyllic as a child. I loved school. But at about, I'm going to say 1974, mom decided that she was lonely and wanted to be near her family who lived primarily on the East Coast. And so we up and moved to Massachusetts.
Oh, good Lord. Back across the country.
I was 12.
Oh, no.
A very pivotal time for me in my life. I was 12 years old.
Yeah.
And
it's kind of a rough time.
It was
time.
Rough. To,
yeah.
And we moved from a community that was very well structured to a rural community. We lived 5 miles out of town on in there. I think we were on the paved road, and any other roads in our neighborhood were dirt.
Wow.
And
completely different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We lived at the mouth of the Cape, a little town called Wareham, Massachusetts. And my dad at the time owned a restaurant, an inn called the Red Inn in Provincetown, Massachusetts. And so when we lived in California, my sister and I, the two younger of the four siblings, would fly to Boston and then get on what we called a puddle jumper to Provincetown and spend our summers every summer in Provincetown.
Yes.
When we moved to Massachusetts, it wasn't as far to travel in the summer. But so that was from 74 to 79. We lived in Massachusetts. And then I don't know why you can't, I have no idea why, but we up and moved back to California in 1979.
Had you gotten out of high school?
I graduated from high school at my high school where I should have gone in California.
Okay.
So my senior year, I spent at Oakmont High School in Roseville, California. When I left Roseville and went to Massachusetts, I should have gone into seventh and eighth grade as middle school.
Uh-huh.
The schools in Massachusetts, sixth and seventh was middle school, eighth through 12 is high school.
Right.
So I had 1 year of middle school and then right into the high school scene. And that was not a good transition for me either.
No.
So,
but, well, that's interesting. So, you know, you learn resiliency from those kinds of experiences because you have to reinvent yourself.
Yes.
Completely.
When we moved from Vermont to Vermont to California, I had the typical New England dialect,
which nobody could understand.
And so I got teased.
Yeah.
Then we went to Massachusetts and I fit in again. Then we went back to California. And at that point, I was old enough to understand that I better drop that New England accent before
it's
going back to California.
Cute, but yeah.
Because it wasn't, a positive thing. So.
Yeah.
But it was interesting. I would tell you what happened was I had a lot of diverse exposure in my life.
Mm-hmm.
If you're familiar at all with Provincetown, it's the East Coast Little San Francisco.
Oh, okay.
Very diverse.
Okay, that's
population.
Excellent.
And people that chose alternative lifestyles. And so I was exposed to that at a very young age, and which I feel like has made me a little more accepting.
Absolutely.
Different people.
Yeah, absolutely.
So.
All right, so you get out of high school and you're in California, right?
Yes.
And then what?
Oh, I fell in love.
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah.
Well,
I was too young. I was too young.
Okay.
I mean, I fell in love
and
everything happened very rapidly and I became a young mother at 19 and my first child.
Okay. That's a little young.
And two more children after that, and the marriage was good until it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And my children's father was injured on the job, and it was a severe injury, a back injury, and it took 5 years for him to go through physical rehabilitation to be able to get back into the workforce.
Wow.
And that was when I experienced my homelessness. My experience was that we went without income I was caretaker for my husband at the time and two young children. I hadn't had my third child at that point. We did have some family support. We were renting a home in Sacramento, but we couldn't pay the rent. After 2 or 3 months of us not being able to pay rent because we had no income, we ended up living in a cab over camper in the driveway of my in-laws' house. Well, the two little ones had a bedroom in the house.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm fortunate when I meet with people here in Korea that are experiencing homelessness that are literally, maybe they have a tent or I feel like I might have had a little bit of a leg up with some support system at least we had shelter. But it was rough losing your home, losing your furniture, losing all of your belongings, not having family photos on the wall, not having home.
Yes. So I think sometimes we forget just how important having a home is.
I was just having a conversation with an unhoused friend of mine here mm-hmm. in Curry, and it's a female.
Mm-hmm.
And for females in particular, it's extremely scary to be yes. unhoused a tent is not secure.
No.
And so not having a door to lock and that peace of mind.
Yep.
You're constantly in crisis mode. You're constantly afraid.
And that's not a good way to go through life.
No, it has long-term impacts on your psyche and your mental health. So
I think it probably has short-term impacts on your physical health. You know, mm-hmm. you get sick if you are uneasy about your life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We know stress triggers.
Yes.
You know, health conditions.
So. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So how did that kind of work itself out then?
Well, once, you know, we did negotiate the workers' comp system, mm-hmm. and I had to go and apply for TANF at the time.
What is that?
It's a temporary aid for needy families, okay. so welfare.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, it took 5 years for mm-hmm. My ex-husband to go through rehab and physical rehab, mm-hmm. rehab, and get a new career.
Yes,
that he could do after he ended up having back surgery. It was all low back, mm-hmm. Slip discs and swollen discs, and so he. But once he was able to go to vocational rehab and learn a new career, then he actually did really well. But at mm-hmm. the time that he had his first surgery, his surgeon told him that within 10 years, scar tissue would build up and he'd probably be looking at a second surgery.
Oh, my God.
And almost 10 years to the day. I'm
really?
Not kidding.
Really?
We had a third child, and mm-hmm. he was playing with our third child, who was 2 at the time, and he reached out to grab hold of him as he was running by, and they went on the floor, and I was calling an ambulance.
Yep.
And he was back in the hospital and had another surgery.
Oh, Beth.
And that, you know, I won't go into any too much more detail after that, but what the end result was a drug addiction.
Oh, that's so sad.
Pain medication.
Absolutely.
You know, and then when that was cut off, street drugs. And mm-hmm. so, and that was the end of, you know, ultimately the end of our relationship. Tried and hung in there, and it just didn't work out.
But, so, you know, the reality is that, again, talking about circumstances that you don't have any control over, you have no way of knowing they're coming. I mean, how could he possibly have known that he was going to hurt his back again?
Yeah.
And when you are in pain, you need pain medication. Mm-hmm. You just need it.
Well, and if you become dependent on that,
yes.
then once, you know, the medical profession will stop that, all of that, then you're looking for an alternative at that point. If your relief has not been, you know, hasn't been successful,
exactly.
then you're looking for alternatives.
Exactly.
And
that was obviously a while ago when cannabis was not a possibility, so there wasn't even the ability to.
Oh, sure.
Right?
This was in the early 90s.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. We lived in California at the time, mm-hmm. so anyway.
Yes. So then what?
So we got divorced, mm-hmm. and I was a single parent for a short period of time. I met my current husband, and we've been together since. He supports, I have to give a plug, if it were
Absolutely.
Not for Carlos, I would not be able to do the things that I do. He supports our household, and I mean, he's an accomplished cook. I don't have to cook. He loves to cook, and far be it for me to take that joy away from him.
Oh, far be it. In fact, if he wants to do more.
You know, and he does. He drives the Dial-A-Ride bus for Curry Public Transit in
wow.
Gold Beach. So he works 4 days a week.
Great.
sometimes five mm-hmm. if they have a medical trip they need done on Thursdays. But we don't have Dial-A-Ride in Gold Beach on Thursdays. So he has Thursdays off, and those are his honey-do list days.
That's great. You know, that's just great.
We pitch in together on the weekends. So, but I get home from work and dinner's either near prepared or prepared, and I'm a very fortunate woman to have.
It doesn't get much better than that.
Support network. Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to take just a short little break. I want to let everybody who's listening know that this is our community on KCIW. And I'm talking today with Beth Barker Hidalgo, who is one of those, you know, remarkable, amazing women that you just kind of go, oh, wow, you're in my community. I'm thrilled. So Beth, you, I saw on the internet that you've worked in a whole lot of different jobs, but they've mostly been in the nonprofit sector.
Yes.
So what is it about tell me about.
Well,
why do you like nonprofits?
I have to say, it's probably just ingrained in me. My mother, as I mentioned, you know, she used a wheelchair for a good 40 plus years. When we first moved to California in 1969, she initially got a job with a carpet cleaning company, but it took a long time before somebody would look beyond her inabilities. Mm-hmm. To see her abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And but shortly after that, she went to work for Goodwill Industries. Now, I know that a lot of people now have some heartburn over Goodwill Industries and the nonprofits where their CEOs are making big bucks. I can guarantee you that wasn't the era that my mother worked
right
for Goodwill Industries. She was the CFO in Sacramento for a period of time.
Wow.
She was the CEO in Abilene, Texas, Long Beach, California, and Boise, Idaho.
Wow, that's wonderful.
Goodwill Industries. So I was raised in an environment. We went to all the Christmas parties at Goodwill. We went to the mm-hmm. Halloween parties at Goodwill. I was raised around people with developmental disabilities and physical disabilities. So again, exposed
yes.
to other capable people.
Right.
And so that helped me to, I'm all about inclusion as long as, you know, for the greater good, whether it's in a public school setting or a work environment, let's get folks as included and involved as possible. We'll figure out where their strengths lie and let's put these folks to work as much as possible in our communities. That's where I think the nonprofit and or the social service side mm-hmm, mm-hmm. lies for me.
Does it feel like there's a different culture in nonprofit? Is it different?
Yes. Well, I really don't have a lot to compare it to,
okay.
to be quite honest
right.
with you. I've worked so long in nonprofit, so it's hard for me to make the comparison to a for-profit setting in as far as work is concerned. You certainly wear a lot of hats in a nonprofit.
Yes.
when I started, so one of the ways that I brought income into our household was I became a licensed daycare provider.
Okay.
There were a couple reasons why I did that. I wanted to be home with my own children
yep.
when they were little, and it was a way to support the household. My first husband had gone through the voc rehab and was out working. He learned how to repair copiers and ATM machines, and he did quite well. And we were, you know, we were not well off, but we were comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Over a period of time as a child care provider in my home, I became almost agoraphobic. Everything was in my home. My kids were there.
Yeah,
my business was there. My life was there. I mean, and it got to be overwhelming. And I decided at one point for my own mental health, I needed to do something different. And I saw an ad in the paper for a bus driver for paratransit,
okay.
which is a nonprofit in Sacramento. So I applied and I got the job. And I went from being in my home hardly
exactly
leaving my home at all
opposite.
To driving all over Sacramento County.
So how was that?
It
how
was
that
so
transition?
Liberating.
Was it?
Oh, yeah. It was
okay.
so liberating.
Good.
To. I mean, I love, now I love to drive. I mean, I just love to drive.
Yeah.
You know. So, you know, I started as a bus driver in 1990 in Sacramento, and I did not leave that company until 2011 before we moved up here. I spent 21 years at that agency.
No kidding.
And I have to name drop. Nobody here will know who this is, but one of my best friends and a mentor of mine was Mary Steinert. She was my boss for about 18 years out of that 21 years. Mm-hmm. Just an amazing woman who saw my potential and nurtured that for me in the workplace. And I was able to climb that ladder within paratransit. If not for her, I'm not sure that my longevity would have been the same, mm-hmm. or if I would have learned and as much. Under her mentorship, I was able to learn a lot about facilities maintenance, risk management, environmental health. I mean, just a broad array of opportunities that
so
I had.
So it's interesting when you think about the importance of mentors.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, without them, we don't really thrive.
Sometimes, I mean, some of us stumble and have right. you know, have our barriers, and when someone like that comes along and takes you under their wing, mm-hmm. it can be the difference between a successful life and career and not.
Yeah, absolutely. You
know, I credit Mary for. We're in touch still to this day.
Excellent.
And she's always on my mind.
So Sacramento, you were there for about 20 years?
Oh, a little over 20 years.
It had to have changed enormously in that time.
It did. Well, and coming from Roseville to Sacramento, too, Roseville was quite the little bedroom community to Sacramento, and there wasn't much between the two towns. And now, as you're driving along the highway, you almost can't tell when you're leaving one area to the other. It's grown so much.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. It became, I was born in rural Vermont. We lived in rural Massachusetts. Rural living is in my blood, and it's where I feel most comfortable. It got a bit too much with population and just the din of living in. And I know Sacramento, to a lot of people, isn't considered a big city, but
it's pretty big.
It had big city issues, and
Plus, it's really hot.
Very hot in the summer.
It is.
And gray, cloudy, and murky in the winter
is
time.
It?
So, seasonal affective disorder is an issue for the valley in Sacramento, if you have...
Well, I remember driving through Sacramento several times during the summer, and the heat was it was unbearable. Mm-hmm. It really was.
Unless you're at the river or at a lake or something, I didn't spend a whole lot of time outside during the middle of the day because it's too hot. You're going from one air conditioned environment to another, and I'm an outdoors person. I love to be outside, and It got to be unbearable over time, and my youngest son wanted to go live with his older brother, who happened to, my oldest son lived in Bremerton, Washington at the time, and he wanted to go live with his older brother. He was going to be 18, and so we made this plan to take him up to go stay with his older brother in Washington, and on our way back, we took the coast.
And that was it.
We discovered Port Orford. We discovered Gold Beach. Mm-hmm. And we didn't stay. We drove on through and went back to Sacramento. But our escape from the heat and the fog in Sacramento was always Pacifica or Half Moon Bay.
Mm-hmm.
We would spend a lot of weekends over at the coast. And so at one point we just decided, what are we doing living here? If we want to live on the coast, let's start looking for, an escape plan. Let's get a plan together and let's start looking for a coastal area. Well, of course, looking in California was out in the question as far as market rate and our affordability until we got up into Del Norte County. And then well, if we're going to go that far, we might as well just keep on going. And
Yeah, exactly.
So we vacationed up here for, I don't know, half a dozen years or more at different times of the season to just get our first trip up to Gold Beach was for my husband and I's, our anniversary is New Year's Eve.
Aww.
So we left right after Christmas and came up and spent mm-hmm. a week in Gold Beach between Christmas and New Year's Eve, and it rained sideways.
Of course.
4 out of the 7 days that we were there. And we loved it.
Oh, did you?
We watched Good. The deer grazing out over the balcony at the hotel. Yeah. We were encouraged by the hotel desk person was like, oh, you need to go beachcombing after the storm. There's always so many finds on the beach. And we did. And we're dog lovers. We had our 2 four-legged babies with us. And
what kind of dogs?
Rescue, mm-hmm. always.
Excellent.
Rescue's yes. our favorite breed.
Yes, absolutely.
So we just loved it. Mm-hmm. And while we were here, I purchased one of the aerial view postcards of Gold Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And I took it back with us when we went home, and I put it on my dresser, and it was the last thing I saw before I went to bed and the first thing I saw when I woke up, and I started visualizing us living here somewhere.
I love that.
Curry County.
Yes.
And it took us, my mother was still alive at the time and living back in Sacramento. Bless her heart, she told me that she was coming back to me before she died because she wanted to be with me when she passed. So she did.
Wow. I said,
thanks, Mom.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
And so, yeah, she came back to Sacramento. And so I wasn't about to leave Sacramento as long as she
Not
was there.
Not until she was done. Yeah.
And so it took us another 3 years after mm-hmm. Mom passed to be able to get it together, get our plan in place, and, mm-hmm. and come up here. But
so yeah. when did you get to this part of the world? When did you move here?
2012, okay. January okay. 2012. And I hit the ground running.
Excellent. I love that.
In addition to working at the nonprofit, I was working with a consultant company out of Colorado called Nusura. And
what is that?
They are still in business, and they do exercise planning, emergency operations plan development for transportation companies, public okay. transportation providers.
Okay.
And at the time, they had a contract in Del Norte County with the Del Norte County Transportation Work Group. So the school districts, their Redwood Coast Transit, and at the time, Coastline not Coastline Neighbors, it's a different agency
okay.
down in down in Del Norte, but they were providing transportation for developmentally disabled folks. So we got all those folks together in a room, and we exercised, we developed exercise plans and emergency operations plans, and then exercised those plans with those agencies. And I continued working with Nusura and on that project once we moved up here. And I was thinking that, you know, there would be other opportunities for me to remain an independent contractor and work in that vein in the emergency management world. It was when I left paratransit, that was one of my many roles, was to be the agency liaison with Sacramento County Emergency.
Oh, wow.
Managers. And mm-hmm. so I had a seat in their EOC and represented our agency during drills, exercises, and actual emergencies in the county. So, and I loved that work. I found it very rewarding training people to be personally prepared mm-hmm. and agencies to be prepared for responding to the community when there's a mm-hmm. disaster.
Mm-hmm.
However, there wasn't any money.
Now, here's a shock.
There was no money and no real opportunities. So I continued doing some technical writing for Nusura and some work I could do from home and working with the agency. When it became clear to me that I had to go get a job.
Yeah, that's always kind of the bad news.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's really exciting, the job you get. So.
Right. Well, and in between that time, I happened to attend a town hall meeting for Senator Wyden.
Mm-hmm.
And I met a woman who you probably all know by the name of Georgia Nellen.
Yes, Georgia. Yes.
Another person, another woman who was pivotal in my career here and becoming embedded in this community. Mm-hmm. I give Georgia a great deal of credit. because during that town hall meeting afterwards, we chatted and I gave her my background and she said, oh my gosh, you have to apply for the Ford Leadership Development Program.
Yeah.
And the application process was closed. They were done. They had the cohort for Cree. And so she pulled some strings for me and I submitted my application and they allowed me into the cohort. And that gave me connections that to this day, I can pick up the phone and I call Michelle Carrillo in Del Norte County, or I call Lori Prouty up at the Port Orford Co-op, or I call Kathy Bowden up in Port Orford. And if I have... If I, you know, have a question or I need a connection to someone else in the community for whatever reason, and I don't believe that I would have that network to this day if I hadn't had that experience of going through that program.
How was it in terms of learning about leadership and stuff? How was the program itself?
Oh, it was a great program. It was really a great program because what they do is that you get a project. And you have to, it's not about the project, it's about the work group. It's about learning to work with people who might see things differently. It's about learning how to collaborate. But we did the bike rest stops. So the bike rest stop at the Port Orford Co-op is our project, and the bike rest stop at the Visitor Center in Gold Beat are the two projects that we decided on and moved forward on.
That's excellent.
Yeah, it was a great experience. But I'll tell you, the most value I got out of the program are just the people in the program and the connections.
And isn't that usually the way it is? That it's really, I mean, we all want to do stuff and get involved in projects, but it's really the people that we meet and connect with that are, it makes all the difference.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. And this is not an easy community to become embedded in.
No. No, it takes a long time before you're accepted.
Yeah, I hear from other colleagues that struggle with that. And and I've heard people say 7 years. If you can make it past 7 years in Curry County, you can make it.
That's interesting because I don't think that you really accept it at 7 years. No, I think it's, well, I think it's longer than that.
And you're never, I mean, I don't know that I'll live long enough to be a local.
By
local definition.
No, exactly. Exactly.
And that's okay. But, you know, I mean, the other side of the coin is that if you walk your talk and prove yourself in the community, then I think, you know, that opens some doors for you as well. So
I think so, too. I think people definitely want to know if you are legitimate, you know, or are you a talker or are you a doer? And, you know, exactly.
So.
I just want to let everybody know who's listening that this is our community on KCIW, and I am speaking with Beth Barker Hidalgo today, and she's just an amazing woman, and I'm having a great time, so back at it. So Beth, what were the organizations that you got really involved with when you're here? So I know there's ORCA. And there was another one that I came across, Coos Curry Housing Authority, the All Care Community Advisory Council. I mean, there were a whole bunch of things that I saw listed. So tell me about those.
Well, if you recall, I said I needed to find a job.
Yes.
So that job turned out to be the Public Health Emergency Preparedness Coordinator for Curry Community Health.
Wow.
So I did that job for 3.5 years, from April of 2013 through June of 2016. So about 3 years. And I became aware, you know, during that time was when the development of coordinated care organizations, All Care, for example, were in development. But I became involved with more with Advanced Health if from the coordinated care organization perspective, and started going to their meetings as they were held in Gold Beach, and started to learn more about the web, the interconnectivity of healthcare and social determinants of health, which housing and food security, and started to become more aware of the level of poverty in our community. And it was very troubling to me. And I really started feeling like we've got to be a more coordinated community in terms of how we serve our families and our individuals so that we can become what I like to call an accountable health community. We, it's a lot of work. But, you know, and that was just at the time I got involved with community health assessments. One of the first community health assessment process I'd ever been through was while I was working at Curry Community Health. And again, learned about the different agencies that are out there trying to prop up and trying to help our folks that are struggling with poverty and or homelessness.
Do you know any statistics for this county about poverty and stuff? I mean, do you have any clues about how bad we are?
Oh, well, it depends on what you're asking about. There are lots of statistics about poverty in our community. And so, you know, I know Port Orford is our more impoverished city within the county. At one point, we read that upwards of 25% of the population in Port Orford is below the federal poverty line.
Wow.
And I think the population bounces around 1,100, somewhere in that neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And I believe Common Good reports that they're serving about 400 families out of that population. So that's
a lot of folks. Yeah.
That's a lot of folks.
Yeah, it really is.
You know, and we do get some data from the school districts when we do the point time count. There were over 30 children in the Port Orford Langley School District that were reported by the district as being unhoused. So, the thing about statistics is, as we all know, they fluctuate from day to day. The point in time count is a snapshot in time. What is happening today, January 30th, for example, 2019? Mm-hmm. It certainly isn't all-encompassing as to the statistics that we see. We see influxes in migratory folks in the summertime because of our weather. Mm-hmm. We may even see influxes in the wintertime of people that are unhoused because we don't freeze and we don't get snow traditionally.
Yes.
We don't.
Yeah.
So it's a moving target.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the unhoused are concerned, we can rely heavily and do often rely heavily on our school districts to give us an idea of how many families are struggling, because they are required to capture that data. So, but it, again, that's a moving target. People
right.
that live in poverty don't tend to put down roots. If
right.
there's an opportunity to improve their situation, they may move and their kids are in and out of a different school district. And I'm talking generally, maybe I'm not painting a picture of Curry, but just in general.
What kind of an impact do you think that has on learning for kids who are in school to not know where they're going to sleep that night or, you know?
This is an issue. And bless our teachers for what they do. They are struggling as well to try to provide the best education possible. But when a child is more concerned about their next meal or where they're going to sleep at night, doing homework is not a priority. And or if doing homework involves a flashlight, if you're lucky, in the backseat of a car or a van, I can't imagine how a child is to focus on and really excel with homework.
And I remember when I was in school that one of the issues was the relevance of what you were learning to your life, you know, and, you know, obviously if you're 10 years old and you're, you know, learning geometry or something, it's not really relevant, you know what I mean? It's like, but it would be even less so if what you really cared about was getting your next meal.
Right. And unfortunately, in many cases, there isn't the support network within the family system itself. Mm-hmm. If the parents aren't in a place to be able to assist their children with geometry, for example, then that makes it even harder.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
It's a struggle. I would really love to see, and I think it's coming, I would love to see more of our district employees, school district employees, healthcare providers, social service workers taking trauma-informed care training.
What is that?
Are you familiar at all with ACEs? You haven't heard about the ACEs?
No. So tell me.
Curry has many master trainers ACEs trainers in Curry County. ACEs stands for Adverse Childhood Experiences.
Okay.
And ACEs, you can take a test there. You can go online and you can find the ACEs test. You can take a test and they ask a series of questions and your score will tell you what your ACE score is. The higher the number, the more trauma you've experienced as a child and throughout your life. And I attended some diversity and equity training a few weeks ago up at ORCA. It was wonderful training. And I heard the presenter made an analogy about trauma and over, you know, repeated trauma. You get a paper cut at work and it stings and it hurts for a little while. By the end of the workday, that paper cut isn't even on your mind anymore.
Right.
But 1,000 paper cuts is all that trauma and over and over and over again happening. And you never know which paper cut's going to take that person over the edge, whether it's a child or an adult. When children are exposed to trauma over and over again, then to me, it's just that much harder for them to focus on possible. Used a word earlier, resiliency. And the messaging from ACEs is it's not a be-all and end-all for that child. It can't. A lot of children who experience trauma build resiliency. All of them.
Yeah, but a lot.
And interestingly enough, if you go through the ACEs presentation, they'll tell you that a lot of kids who experience trauma growing up will become first responders.
Ah, yes.
It's very reactionary. Yes. And so they're ready to go. Yep.
That absolutely makes sense to me.
So it's not, it's not a quote-unquote death sentence for kids to have been exposed to all this trauma. It's not ideal, but we can teach these kids how to, you know, build a toolbox and tools to put it, to learn other ways of reacting and responding, other ways of processing life as
and
it comes
really
at them.
It's really about just being aware of what other people's world is, you know, that we don't all experience life the same way.
Nope.
We don't all have the same, you know, past. We don't all have the same anything.
Right.
And
my experience is not your experience.
Right.
I say that to people, you know, I always am cautionary to let people know that I'm working with that are unhoused, that I too have my experience. It's not yours, it's mine.
That's right.
And And I really try hard not to say I understand, because I don't.
No.
I don't understand everyone's, you know, story.
No.
Or how it's impacted them.
Right.
So.
Right. Which doesn't mean that you can't be compassionate and empathetic, but yes, you didn't actually walk in their shoes.
Right. Yeah. And the fact that I've had trauma, I don't always react the right way.
Mm-hmm.
I might be reactionary to situations, and I'm mindful of that now. I wasn't aware of ACEs until maybe 2 years ago. When I learned about ACEs, I was like, I understand why I behave the way I do sometimes.
No, that's something I will definitely look into.
Yeah.
That's very interesting to me.
It's very interesting. There's a great TED Talk.
I love TED Talks.
Yeah, I don't recall, but if you just Google ACEs and TED Talk, it's about a 20-minute TED Talk by the doctor who, there's a group now, organization called ACE Interface, and that they're the ones that are promoting the ACEs education and trauma-informed care. Curry's had many people trained on the ACEs, so the presentation, so they can go out to other organizations and do this presentation. The next natural step for us is to bring trauma-informed care training into Curry County so that, okay, so now we know why some kids or adults behave the way they do or react the way they do. What do we do about that? And how do we craft our education providers and our social service providers, how do we become more trauma-informed so that we can understand why a client or a student may be reacting, responding in the way that they are.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to ignore folks that don't necessarily fit in a box or yes. behave the way we think they ought to.
Yes.
And those are often the people who need our attention the most.
Yes. And if you can get them before they've gone over the edge, mm-hmm. then you actually could have a productive member of society there mm-hmm. instead of somebody who's gone over the edge, mm-hmm. who's no longer.
Mm-hmm.
And mental health in Curry County. I mean, we've got some real problems here.
We do. And I don't think we're not alone. I think this country, it's not unique to Curry County.
Mm-hmm.
The country in and itself, there's been such a stigma around mental health for such a long time that seeking mental health care has been a taboo.
Mm-hmm.
And we're way behind the curve on that. If we can reduce the stigmatism around mental health and mental illness, a person who is diagnosed with mental illness shouldn't feel any barriers or experience any barriers to service as anyone who just broke their arm. It should yes. be the same. If you're having a physical health problem and you need to see a doctor, most people don't hesitate.
Right.
They go and take care of themselves. But right. if we are struggling with mental illness, then it's that stigmatism.
And a lot of times the mental illness actually can be traced back to a physical component. You know, if you're depressed, a lot of times it's because the serotonin level in your body, in your brain, is not getting re-upped into
right.
So it actually is a physical, biological issue.
That, it can be.
Yes.
It can be.
Not always, but yes.
Be. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, what I do recognize in Curry, and I'm sure, again, it's not unique to Curry. It's probably something that plays out in rural America, is the generational poverty, mm-hmm. generational behavioral health and mental health issues that we see here in Curry County. And I believe, again, in rural America. Rural America has been ignored for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
When there are grant funds coming out of Washington, you watch the awards, and a great deal of them are distributed east of the Mississippi.
Yes. Yes.
We don't see a lot of funding coming this way from Washington, D.C. to right. support developing programs to address whole community approach and whole community transformation. And so it's difficult for rural America to cobble together. We have the least amount of resources, the least amount of human capital. We have, you know, and yet we're expected to cobble together services for our communities and for our community members, and that's it.
I mean, just basic health care. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, wow.
And we're in a precarious location.
Yes, yes. And you in Gold Beach are in a completely different precarious location than we in Brookings are.
Right.
It's and yet we're only 30 miles apart. I mean, it's just bizarre.
And keep going further north to Port Orford, and there's an even different
yes.
dynamic.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Yeah, we all have our little unique ways. And, you know, some of the programs that are available or grant opportunities that are available, if they are designed for metropolitan or urban settings, they don't necessarily work.
Mm-mm.
Here.
That's right.
So if we don't have the flexibility to step out of the cookie cutter design or cookie cutter model and be able to shape a program around our actual resources, that makes it difficult as well. But we have a difficult time recruiting and retaining professionals into this area. The housing crisis is a piece of that puzzle.
Yep.
Wages are a piece of that puzzle. We don't yep.
You got to want to live here.
You do.
I mean, you got to want it.
Yeah. I moved here because I love the place, and then I figured out how to afford to stay here afterwards.
Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
You know,
and as you
not
get
always
older
advised.
And there are health issues that come up, I mean, that takes a whole another set of being able to negotiate.
Sure.
Because otherwise you're going to Medford every week.
And imagine if you're on OHP and you're unhoused.
Yes.
And you need a specialist.
Right.
I mean, now there's non-emergency medical transportation provided by the coordinated care organizations, but that's still not an easy system to navigate. And, you know, people who have had trauma or been unhoused for a significant amount of time don't have a lot of patience for difficult systems.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, well, something
and
should
so they
be
give
easy,
up.
Shouldn't it?
And they give up.
Yeah,
and then they
yeah.
start maybe self-medicating and
yes.
dealing with, you know, trying to deal with their situation on their own, and that
yep.
doesn't.
So tell me about ORCA.
Oh.
I really want to know.
Well, ORCA is the umbrella organization for Head Start. So the Head Start programs that are operated in Coosa Creek County, there's a wonderful after-school program called Great Afternoons that is run up in Reedsport. So we even have a toe in up in Reedsport and supporting an after-school program up there. All of the food pantries that are operating in Curry receive some of the foods from South Coast Food Share, which is a big warehouse up in at the Coos County ORCA admin offices. We have housing programs, about a dozen or so different types of housing programs, rental assistance programs for folks, depending on what their situations are, single families and their income and eligibility. They may be eligible for one of the housing programs. We have energy assistance. So from October till maybe about March, there's the low-income household energy assistance program. And people who are struggling to pay their, for us, it's Coos Creek Electric, to pay their bill. If they're income eligible, they can get some assistance there.
I think that's, so on my bill, I was given the option to round up to the, you know, nearest dollar, and that money is
that's a different program. The roundup program supports other payments to people who are income eligible. LIHEAP actually comes down through, it's funneled down through a state agency and into the CAG, all community action agencies. Every county across the country has a community action agency. And this was established, I think it was 1964.
Wow.
It's the beginning of the war on poverty. Community action agencies were developed to provide support services for low-income households. So we also have a weatherization program. If folks want their homes audited, we can get them on a list to get their home audited and make recommendations for how to tighten up their envelope and lower their energy bills.
Great.
So, and most recently, we've added South Coast Families First is a new, fairly new department. And that focuses on, again, whole family transformation. So they're dealing with kiddos and parents, and we have parent cafes. There is the STEP program, which is an employment-ready program. We have a FAST transitional house. FAST stands for Family Assistant Support Team. And there's a home up in the Hunter Creek area in Gold Beach that we rent. And if kiddos have been separated by child welfare, they're separated from their families and they're in the foster care system, we can work with the parents to get those families reunited. Or we can sometimes step in and prevent kids from being removed from the household altogether and provide supports for the families so that they can stay together.
God, that's excellent.
So I'm sure there's other.
Of course, there's always other.
I would be really remiss if I didn't mention our upcoming fundraiser on April 26th at the Mill Casino, ORCA Iron Chef.
Okay.
This would be our second annual. And last year it was so much fun and we blew the doors off of the North Bend Community Center. So we had to move to a larger venue, which is the Mill Casino. And three chefs from local restaurants, Bandon Dunes, Restaurant O, and the Mill Casino itself will be competing. They get a box of food that one might get from a food pantry and then a mystery protein. And they have to make a dish, and we have judges. And the Mill Casino is catering this event this year. Last year we had the youth from the SWOC Culinary School up at the Coos campus that catered. But it's a lot of fun. It's a great event, and I'm looking forward to this year. It's going to be even more fun.
Now, you also have a facility that's opening, don't you? Isn't there a...
I do. That is, I'll take off my Orca hat and put on my Curry Homeless Coalition hat. And we just launched the Southern Oregon Coast Resource Center. It's basically a one-stop. Orca is there, myself and Bronwyn Greathead, who runs the South Coast Families First project and programs down in Curry, are in that office. And then we also have Advanced Health. There are two staff people from Advanced Health in the office. And we have SCBEC, South Coast Business Employment Corporation, in the office. We are hosting 12-step meetings in the office.
That's great.
We just secured volunteers for five-day-a-week reception services. So we have a face when people come in and we can book appointments. And we're doing a lot of coordinated entry assessments, which is people who are self-identify as unhoused. Or, we're able to gather a lot of demographic information and a lot of information around wellness and social behaviors and risky behaviors, and all that data goes into the Homeless Management Information System, which is a HUD database.
Is this resource center open at this point?
It's open. We've soft opened, and we are...
When is your grand opening?
Grand opening is May 2nd, 10 a.m. ribbon cutting, and we'll do tours through the facility between then and 3 o'clock.
Excellent.
In the afternoon, we'll have some nibbles and refreshments, and we have silent auction items to do some fundraising for the coalition. So
that's great. Yep. That's just, it's so exciting. So
it's very exciting. Yeah. We're so grateful for Advanced Health. We got a grant from, we're in a grant agreement, two-year grant agreement with Advanced Health. They, if without their financial support, we would not be able to do what we're doing. They've basically given us enough funding to cover the rent in the facility for 2 years. So we're their rent.
Excellent.
Able to really focus on triaging people as they come in the door and trying to connect them with the right resources. We're also working with the Sheriff's Department, parole and probation. We get referrals from the Sheriff's Department, so we're helping with reentry services for folks that come out of the criminal justice system.
Excellent. I hate to tell you this because it's always shocking to me, but we're out of time.
Oh.
No, right? How did an hour go by like that? If people have questions or whatever, is there a way to get in touch with you, or is there, how do they find the Resource Center? You know, give us some contact.
So the Resource Center is located at 29821 Colvin Street in Gold Beach. My email address is for ORCA is bhidalgo@orcca.us if you're looking for ORCA services. And then we have curryhomelesscoalition@gmail.com is the email for the coalition.
Perfect. I want to thank you so much for being on the show, Beth. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for listening. My guest today has been ORCA Curry Services Coordinator Beth Barker Hidalgo, and we've been discussing the grand opening of the new Resource Center in Gold Beach. If you enjoy our programming, as a volunteer organization, we can always use your help. This has been Our Community, and I'm Candace Michelle.